Welcome back to the Red Dirt Road podcast. Marshall Farnsworth here with guest Canadian indie country rocker, singer-songwriter, Kim...
Kondrashoff.
Kondrashoff.
Yeah, an Irish name.
I think the spelling kept tripping me up when I put it in my calendar and I have to go back more than saying it, but you said, man? Irish?
No, I'm joking, man. I mean, it's Russian. It's a Russian name, and it's just that too many syllables.
So you are you're our first guest on here that's musician that's reached out to me. So how about that?
Cool. Well, I'm digging that, man. I'd like to be the first.
I had a guest come on here before that reached out to me, but you're the first of the any musicians. So,
well, you know what?
You're a milestone in this podcast.
Works for me, buddy.
So I saw on Facebook you're friends with our other Canadian guy, Ian Krochek.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know him. I mean, like, he lives on the other side of Canada, and he's East Coast. I'm on the West Coast, but we've because he's a Canadian indie country guy, our paths have sort of, our songs have ended up on the same playlist, if you might say. You know.
Yep. Yeah, we had him on a couple times last year.
Oh,
and
cool.
Plan on having him again. We just kind of got into this indie country, Canadian indie country, just kind of stumbled into it. And we've had a few people, Corey Gallant, we had on here before.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to get into this Brooks and Dunn song and then into your album.
But, sure.
Yeah, real quick. I'm a big Cleveland Browns fan, NFL. Are you into the NFL or Canadian Football League at all?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, man, I mean, not really. I'm sort of I'm a old-fashioned fight fan. You know, I'm a boxing. I did a little bit myself, and, you know, I watch boxing. That's pretty well what I watch.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a big fight fan. And usually the lighter weight classes, because the action's a lot quicker and they're faster, you know. Heavyweights have a tendency to just sort of, I don't want to generalize, but, you know, lug around the ring and throw bombs and hug each other. And I've always sort of found their fights slower. Smaller, you know, the lower the weight class, the faster the action is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I can agree in the small amount of that I've watched. In the middle of the NFL preseason, just why I brought that up, I was at a pretty cool watch party the other day for the first Cleveland Browns preseason game, so I'm super excited for the season.
Well, I'm just glad that, you know, they're playing, man. I'm just glad that any sports, anybody, you know, who is a sports fan is be able to, like, watch a game, you know, with the world the way it is right now.
Yeah, it was the season was in jeopardy last year, and I was very thankful for it, because I generally I'm a sports fan, but I'm mostly super dedicated to Cleveland Browns local.
They're your team, man. They're your team. It's just like, you know what? I'm from Vancouver. Our hockey team is the Vancouver Canucks. And I'm not a, you know, I don't really, you know, they're my hometown team. I don't really follow them, but I got friends of mine that are hardcore. They're our team. You know what I mean? Hardcore fans, they're our team. And they stand by them. Oh, hook, line, and sinker, you might say.
I completely can understand that.
Loyal fans. Even when they screw up.
Yeah.
Even when they screw up.
So this song, Heart Broke Out of My Mind, is the fourth song off this album. It written by Ronnie Dunn. Not a single, kind of sounds like a single though, but I'm getting to the breakdown of this kind of lyrics and the verses. So it's got kind of a 15-second kind of funky band intro. First verse, he's talking about drinking and dancing. The whole lyrics are pretty typical of Brooks and Dunn songs. It's got a quote from this first verse. I'm going to shine my buckle to George Jones, obviously referring to his belt buckle.
Yeah.
And but I looked up. So did you know really what that means? Is that a common shine my buckle? Is that a common phrase for talk about dancing or something?
I'll be honest with you, man. I don't know. Sometimes I find that some of these lyrics are, I don't know, a metaphor that's open to interpretation. You know, I guess what I'm trying to articulate here, shine my belt buckle. I'm going to comb my hair to Elvis Presley, or I'm going to do this. I'm doing something to spiff myself up in tribute to somebody, you know?
I guess, yeah, it would make more sense if he's talking about before he goes out dancing, he's going to shine his belt buckle. I'm not sure how it makes much sense as far as.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just that he does have a belt buckle that has, you know, an image of George Jones on it, and it's George Jones. You know, I've seen those belt buckles where guys are a big fan of I saw Waylon Jennings' belt buckle. You know, so maybe it's, you know, one of those belt buckles that has the image of George Jones on it, and you know, one of those. It could be that, you know.
Second verse, it is talking about drinking because his lady left, and it got a quote here: "Jose, pick me up and get me on my feet." And it just fits in really well with the song and all kind of Brooks and Dunn songs, where it's got the heartbreak, but it's generally pretty positive. It feels like he knows what he's got to do to get over this woman. He's in a just have a
good, you know, night what of fun. What I liked about these guys is that I find there's even though it's, you know, a sad song, but there's an upbeat thing, but there's also humor in there too. You know, I find that it's peppered with humor. So, you know, Jose picked me up. I mean, I found that funny. Maybe other people wouldn't, but I just find that it'll, you know, their tunes are peppered with humor, even though it is a topic about breaking up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they made their money on, pretty much.
They wrote some good tunes, man. They wrote some really good tunes.
I just pulled out a few other quotes.
Yeah.
That I liked the chorus. It's got one. Well, of course, it says the title of the song, "I'll Be Heartbroke Out of My Mind." And it says, "It's just temporary insanity to get over what you did to me." Nice kind of rhyme there. And it just fits in real well. Also kind of funny. Temporary insanity. Temporary being
it ain't gonna last that long.
Few hours at the bar or whatever.
Few hours at the bar, yeah.
And then maybe one of my favorite quotes of the song is in the third verse. It says, "BYOT, I brought my own trouble tonight." That's a pretty that's a pretty funny one.
Well, you know what? The beauty of these, I guess if you call it slang, metaphor, or whatever. I brought my own trouble tonight. I don't need anybody else's. You know. It's poetry, man. I call it country poetry. You know, that's the best way I can describe it.
So that's pretty much all I have for the lyrics. So it seems like you like this song. Do you have anything else?
Yeah. Well, you know what?
Sorry
for interrupting. I mean, when you told me, when you sent it to me, I listened to it, man. And it really had, I guess it sort of took me back to when I was playing full time in bars, and it just had that. I was right there in some honky tonk I was playing. You know, I just sort of got transported back into time. And I just, all these memories started popping up in my head. People, this back in the day, you could still smoke in a bar. It just transported me back in time. It had that, you're sitting in a bar somewhere, honky tonk feel, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This song sounds almost the same as, We'll Burn That Bridge, very similar, but yeah. They have, you know, especially early Brooks and Dunn, they have kind of a formula, but mm-hmm. I love that formula. It's their own. It's unique. There are other, it is a little bit of a 90s country sound. You know, you got like Mark Chestnut and others kind of like that, that had a little bit similar, but Ronnie Dunn's vocals could not be duplicated. And I absolutely love this song. I think that it sounds as good as, or even better than some of their singles. I think it could have been a single. And, you know, We'll Burn That Bridge peaked at number two, which I think this is pretty much just as good of a song as that. Upbeat, it's funny, neo-traditional honky-tonk, like you said. Brooks and Dunn, Gold, I think that this is top two, maybe three song on the album for me when it's all said and done. And kind of actually, I mean, I went through like last year and just like over the summer, just listened to all of their music again and hadn't really remembered this song a whole lot. And then I listened to it and yeah, I mean, it's, I can't believe this wasn't like a single or something. This song is
phenomenal. The thing is, I think it probably would have worked as a single because I mean, a lot of guys like me and then there's a gazillion of them out there that we've all gone through that. Break up, go to the bar, get hammered, you know, hello. That's kind of like a ritual or something, you know, and we've all been there, man. So it has a real universal theme, you know, so I'm surprised they never released it, but man, there's so many decisions on what is going to be released as a single, what's going to be an album cut. And sometimes, you know, what you think should be a single, again, like you just found this on an album, you know. So there's been many cuts that I've listened to other people's music and I go, well, why isn't this a single? You know, maybe it was a record company's decision. Who knows?
The last thing I was going to say about this type of song to me. So we do a lot of Brooks and Dunn on here.
Right.
And they kind of got me into country music. One of my favorite country duo artist, musician, whatever. And this type of song is why I think they're so great, is that it wasn't even a single and you listen to it and it's pretty much just as good as their single on this album that peaked at number two. They had another one that peaked at number one. Mm-hmm. So they're the furthest thing from a one hit wonder. You know, they don't have as many albums as like Johnny Cash or something, but they got a few albums here that were just really good. It, single or not, they had a, you know, especially these ones where Ronnie Dunn was singing, the ones where Kix Brooks was singing, sometimes, you know, they need to kick him out of there, get Ronnie singing. But ones like this, they were pretty good.
Well, you know what, man? I got to say, when it comes to songwriting, because, I mean, you ain't got a song, you got to have something. And if you don't have the song, nothing's going to happen. And those guys write really good songs. They're excellent craftsmen. That's why those songs work, man. That's why those songs work, because they're good songs.
Yeah. Yeah, wrote it by himself, too. It doesn't even have anyone else accredited on here.
No collaboration, nothing.
So we will get into your album, Let the Madness Begin. So there's two albums that you had on Spotify. Is there any other albums that you have that were not put on there?
Well, I do have an EP that my girlfriend's singing on, six songs, called Red Shoes. And it's my gal, Sandra Capaduca, my lovely gal, Sandra Capaduca, who's singing on it. And I've got another album called Kim Kondrashoff, Now and Then, with guest artists.
Mm, yeah, the Now and Then I saw on there. I think the Red Shoes, it might have been labeled as singles, but yeah, it was probably an EP. So I guess, I just wanted to jump to this one because, you know, I figured it's the first album and maybe if we have you on here again, we can talk about the next album or whatever, but wasn't really thinking doing a entire album dive, but I found it very interesting because it kind of starts out kind of country and then gets a little more rock and there's even some jazz in there.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, the first song, Let the Madness Begin, that's my favorite one off the album, probably not coincidentally since it's named after the album. You probably knew it was going to be pretty good. I really like the harmonica, and I think is in there, and some real country, the real instruments that you hear in actually in the first two songs. Then you got the third one, kind of slows it down. The fourth song, Don't Put Me Away, kind of a beach rock sound with the cowbell, really goes
cowbell there, a little with a little reggae feel going on there, you know.
And then you got some rock, kind of a rock ballad with a Be Your Window or
By Your Window, yeah.
The Right Words, kind of a, I described it kind of an 80s pop rockish kind of sound. And then some smooth jazz actually on the next one. And the last two were kind of rock and the last one kind of soft rockish. So tell me about the album, like.
Well, what would you like to know? I mean,
what was the writing process like, I guess, before you recorded this?
Well, I can specifically say that song, Let the Madness Begin, was composed one night. A friend of mine who added a few chord changes was composed one night under the influence of a Canadian club, a little bit of pot and a lot of cigarettes. And that's how that song came about. We were just hammered out of our skulls and we recorded it. And then I played it for my mentor and he said, don't change nothing, man. We got to record it like this. I said, are you sure? Oh yeah. Don't change nothing. So that's how that song basically came about. We were just drunker than skunks and just sort of messing around with chord changes and lyrics. And that's pretty well that's how that happened. With that tune.
So it was written before that night, right? And then it was just recorded when you were...
That night we wrote it that night. And then later on, when I gave the demo to my mentor who had the studio, he listened to it and I said, well, maybe I should change this. And he said, don't change nothing, man. I said, are you sure? He says, I'm definitely sure. I said, what about the lyrics? He said, the stream of consciousness. Don't change nothing.
The hook I love strong. It. I'm glad it was not changed because I like. So, yeah, well, what about, you know, kind of the sound of the album, how it's like starts out kind of country. And there's a lot of rock. Is that kind of just the type of music that you play?
Well, you know, it's
kind of blends.
I guess what it is that because I played in cover bands and we had to, you know, we'd be playing, An Empty Bottle, you know, You're Still on My Mind by George Jones. And, you know, we'd be playing that. And then we'd be playing something like John Cougar's Hurt So Good, because you're playing a cover band, you cover it all, right? So I've got a lot of different influences, and I'm a real big country fan. And so there's the country influence, and then, of course, there's the rock influence, and there's the jazz influence, because the music that I've listened to and some of that I've played commercially has obviously influenced my writing and how it comes out.
What would you say is your favorite song of this album?
Oh man. You know what? Here's the weird thing about that. On any particular day, one will be a favorite. And then it'll change. You know? It's odd like that. I could say, well, maybe, you know, I'm sitting around getting drunk with a friend of mine. Let the madness begin. Yeah, that's, you know. And then maybe the next day, you know, if I'm sort of a little bit on the blue side, the last tune, Rock and Roll Dharma, might be, you know, it might be that one. So it fluctuates. I find it very, very, very hard to be objective about my own work. You know, because as they say, you're going to always be your own worst critic, you know? So they change. My favorite tune changes by the day. As a matter of fact, since I sent that to you, I don't think I'd listened to that album in a long, long time. It's kind of going back and revisiting an old friend, you know. And it was recorded analog with tape back in the good old days. So not digital.
When was this recorded?
Well, to be honest with you, sir, it was recorded in 1995.
All right, so not too far off this Brooks and Dunn song that we're talking about.
No, not at all, man.
I was thinking it was around 2012 because that's when it was put on there. But
no, I know. Yeah. Well, that's when it was reissued.
So, yeah, I mean, any other interesting stories that you have, like the first song that you mentioned on here for any of these other ones? Besides, I didn't have a whole lot of specific questions, just whatever you have that's interesting about this album.
I can safely say this, that when I recorded it, it was recorded at in Langley, Surrey, BC. And the guy who owned the studio was a student of Lenny Bros, this famous jazz guitar player, who Chet Atkins took under his wing. And my mentor was a contemporary of Randy Bachman's from the Guess Who, you know, Burton Cummings, Randy Bachman's. They all grew up in Winnipeg. And so, you know, he'd been around and he had opened for Loretta Lynn. He had played guitar for Loretta Lynn. He actually played lead guitar for Waylon Jennings at the Calgary Stampede many years ago. So he had quite an industrious, you know, one of those careers that, you know, they almost made it, but they didn't. Anyways, he opened the studio. And when I went and recorded it back then, I had Vancouver's best studio players playing on that album. So one of the reasons it sounds really good is that Don Thompson, my mentor, was the engineer, producer, and I had Vancouver's best studio guys playing on it. So that's why, you may not like the music, somebody once told me, but he said, man, those players are good. And I said, yeah, because they're Vancouver's best. And they were great guys. They played what was supposed to be played. You know, they weren't trying to impose anything, you know, their own personal agenda on there. They served the song. And it was so much fun to record with them because they were quick, man, real quick. But they're, you know, they were, as I said, they were Vancouver's best. And I had a real blast recording that album. And I have to say that the time we spent in the studio after recording was done, we partied late into the night and we'd listened to the playback. So it was quite a good experience. Expensive, but it was good. And I'm happy that I actually recorded that album way back in the day. And what I really liked about the fact that when it was recorded on tape and analog, as far as I'm concerned, there's a big difference between tape and digital. I think analog tape, you got a big, thicker, fatter, warmer sound. Like, for example, a bass note could take 7 feet of tape, one single note, boom, you know? But there are probably people out there that's, you know, would say, I don't know what you're talking about. But no, I was happy that I recorded that album. I really don't know. The last tune, Rock and Roll Darling, we weren't sure how we were going to do that. And then I just remember Don saying, we should do this as a waltz, you know, just acoustic guitar, a vocal. I think there's a bit of a synth in there, a drum, and some unison background vocals, as opposed to like a whole production with a band. We just stripped it down to nothing. And I think that's why the song has a certain charm to it, because it's intimate and there's not a lot of instruments. There's not a lot going on there. Just, you know, basic guitar, drum, and I think a little synth and some background unison vocals.
Yeah, that song definitely, it sounds different than the other songs on the album.
Yeah, I don't know what you call it, folk, country, pop, I don't know. It's hard to say. She's in some honky-tonk tonight, I know. Dancing where the music's loud and the lights are low. In a crowded bar, she likes to hang around. And as long as there's a honky-tonk, she'll never settle down. Close up the honky tonks, lock all the doors. Don't let the one I love go there anymore. Close up the honky tonks, throw away the keys. Then maybe the one I love will come back to me. If I have the power, Lord, to turn back the time, live again the hours when she were all mine. Cause it hurts me to see her running with that crowd downtown. And as long as there's a honky-tonk, she'll never settle down. Close up the honky-tonks, lock all the doors. Don't let the one I love go there anymore. Close up the honky-tonks, throw away the keys. Then maybe the one I love will come back to me.
Woo!
Gracias, amigo. Gracias. What am I'm sorry there. Just what is that? You might have to edit this. I pulled into a roadhouse in Texas, a little place called Hamburger Dance. I'm gonna put a corner in that old jukebox and play that truck driving man. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'm gonna put a dollar in that old jukebox and play the truck driving man. When the waitress then brought me some coffee, thank that little honey once again. I said that old song, Lord, sure does don't fit me, for I'm a truck driving man. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'm gonna put a dollar in that old jukebox and play the truck driving man. Well, I got a board in the back of my old semi, like a flash, Lord, I was gone. I got those big old wheels just to roll it, cause I'm on my way, Lord, to San Antonio. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'm gonna put a quarter in that old jukebox and play that truck driving man. And play that truck driving man. Oh yeah.
Sweet. I love it. Sounds good.
Thanks, man. Well, listen, Marshall, listen, man, I just got to say thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for getting us indie guys out there and, you know, letting the world hear our music. You know, it's just very, very cool. And there's an old saying, you know, if it wasn't for guys like you, us indies wouldn't have a voice, man. So I'm just very appreciative.
I all I do is look for if you got the country sound, which you've got some rock in here too, which is cool. But you know, I just try to stay away from the pop country. I'm out here for the real country artists.
You got it, man. We're on the same page with that. Pop country. Well, you know, I was going to use him as expletives, but I ain't going to be doing that. But you know where I'm coming from, man, when I think about pop country.
Oh, I know. There's a festival in Ohio, and usually it's what's called the Country Fest. And usually it's one weekend a year. This year they actually had a two different weekends because they didn't have it last year.
Yeah.
And I'm like looking at the country artists. They're all kind of newer. And yeah, there was only one day that I bought a ticket. Like there's basically 5 of the 6 days were like these pop country guys mostly. Right. And so that's how like mainstream country is now. It's this country pop, but there's a lot of new country artists that are real country, kind of in the indie world, that are still real popular. Culture Wall, I'm sure do you know him?
No, I don't, man. Hey, you know, he's
on the Canadian side.
Oh, okay. I'm a bit of a dinosaur, you know. I have to be reminded, because I'll tell you, there's some young cats out there, you know, that are really good, that, you know, that I've never heard before. Back in the mid 80s, I remember it was guys like Dwight Yoakam and Steve Earle that brought back the honky tonk. You know, I mean, unfortunately, back in the day, Chet Atkins, who I respected as a musician, but took over RCA, and they homogenized country music. They made it more sort of pop, palpable, to try to cross over into other markets. And I guess that's all cool, but man, I got to have that twang. I got to have that hurt. I got to have that. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, it's completely different genre. It's
well, you know what I don't understand is that you know, my mentor played a song by Faith Hill. And I tell you, it was released as a country record, okay? As far as I'm concerned, it wasn't country. And my mentor laughingly says, oh, yes, it is. I said, how's that? There's a steel guitar in it. This song was a funk pop tune, disco. And I went, how is this country? Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Or what do you call it? Rap country? Yeah. No. You know, all I'm saying is, for me, it don't work. If somebody else likes that, all the power to him, man. But, you know, I'll take George Jones, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, go way back to Lefty Frizzell, you know, Hank Williams.
Yeah.
You know?
You're cheating heart. It's a great one.
You're cheating heart. You betcha, man. The Hillbilly Shakespeare. Man, that guy wrote some great tunes.
I know, and he was only, I believe, 29. He passed 29. Away, and he had all those great songs.
Well, you know what was really kind of weird about that? They speculated that his driver, like, he was already dead. Like, he didn't die in the car. Like, he was already dead. I mean, this is what I heard, legend has it, that when he was unconscious, passed out, that when they put him in a Cadillac on the way to that gig where he was going, when they took him out of the hotel room, this is what I thought I read, that he didn't actually die in the car. He was already dead when they put him in. His driver, chauffeur, guy who looked after him, he was already dead when they put him in the backseat of the Cadillac, you know. But great artist, man.
Yeah.
Great artist. I read somewhere he said something about fame, and he said the higher he got up in the ivory tower, the lonelier he got, because he said everybody wanted a piece of Hank Williams. Now, this is what I thought. I remembered reading somewhere, and he said, if I could start it all over, I'd rather stay. I don't know, it was some little radio station that he had a show, a weekly show on Saturdays. I don't know where, I think it was in wherever he was from, I think Alabama. I could be wrong, but he just said, if I could have gone back and just stayed there, because he had a real sort of, I guess, love-hate thing with fame, that he's just said the further he went up the ivory tower, the lonelier it got, because he just said everybody wanted a piece of him. Like he said, I don't know who my real friends are, or I don't quote me on that, but I think that's what I thought. That was the gist of the story, you know, that if you could go back, just stay where he was with that little, you know, Saturday afternoon show we had on a radio station. I think he was from Mobile, Alabama. I could be wrong.
He was from Alabama. I don't remember exactly where.
I think Mobile. I could be wrong, too. But that's what I thought I read somewhere, that he just said, man, all this fame, you can have it. I just, you know, if I just stayed in that little radio station and played my Saturday afternoon show. Kind of sad. But he wrote some good music. Played some great tunes, man.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm a big, big, big fan. You know, Tony Bennett, the jazz singer, he did a cover of Cold, Cold Heart by Hank Williams. He wasn't too fond of it. But once the money started rolling in, you know what he said? Man, that's a good tune. That's a real good tune. I like Tony Bennett, but I didn't like his version of it because it sounded too much like a, I don't know, like an opera tune or something, you know? Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? Nah, not for me, man. No twang, no bang.
I've not heard it.